Honestly, but if she found the right boy, or girl, I don't care. Anything. I was a lesbian for a while, you know. But it was all just too wet for me in the end. Men are so lovely and dry.
Got time, I'm ticking over, I think I'm ready to go. Just the 10th year, a little bit on the volume. And welcome back to the podcast, everybody. We're Matt and Bob, we're Hero Pod. You're listening to the
Analysis.
Happy New Year, Bob. I hope Larry David will forgive us. What is it, the 9th? But, you know, we're just over the 1 week mark. But, hope you had a good time, Christmas, everything. A packed slate here. You know, movies coming fast and thick. You got the Lions continuing their season for the first time in a long time for us. A lot of stuff going on, but yeah, it's good to finally catch up and chat with you.
It has been a busy end of the year for sure. Now I feel like we're starting the awards push, which makes for a busy beginning of the year as well. So yeah, a lot of things I feel like I have to catch up on. I feel like there's always like 9 different movies or TV shows that I feel like I'm having FOMO that I'm not catching up on. So January.
And I guess this has a lot to do with the strikes and stuff, right? Where like people kept pushing the release windows and... You know, since Barbenheimer, we had almost nothing of note. And then everything is kind of coming fast and thick and kind of getting buried by one another. A lot of these movies came out during, you know, what, the festivals of Venice and, you know, whatever else, Salt Lake City. But you know, there's still movies that haven't been widely released. You got Poor Things that a few people get to see in, you know, L.A. and New York. But... A lot that's just getting dumped around, and you know, I mean, you kind of catch what you can catch, and a lot of what's being seen is what's on Netflix, you know, readily available. The Holdovers is streaming on Peacock, I just found out. Mm-hmm. So as soon as I paid $20 to buy it on Apple, it's streaming on Peacock. So that's out there.
Gotcha.
That was Killers of the Flower Moon. It's going to be available in 3 days on Apple Plus, but it's... You know, you can always also buy that right now. Holdover is kind of like an instant classic holiday movie that people will probably now be watching as opposed to, you know, seeing it over the holidays. I feel like the holidays used to be a good, everyone would go out and see movies, and maybe that's no longer the case. You got something like Maestro, or, you know, remember when Don't Look Up was kind of a big Netflix movie?
Netflix drop, yeah.
Did you get a sense of what, like, the... I mean, Ferrari dropped around Christmas. That kind of bombed, from what I've been able to tell.
People are done with Driver and Italian accents.
Yeah, I fell asleep watching the first half of it. I tried to put down a movie at like 11 p.m. My last night in L.A. I was like, I got to get out of here. I'm falling asleep. That kind of not so much to do with the film, but mostly me just being a little too overly aggressive with trying to get him in. But yeah, I don't know. I mean, Maestro, I guess Saltburn is kind of the buzziest. It's like people are like, have you seen this? Have you heard about this? Have you seen this?
Have you heard about this?
I can't think of a thing. I mean, I guess maybe now people are starting to catch up on Oppenheimer and maybe to a lesser extent Barbie, but that's kind of come and gone. I feel like a lot of people have already seen that stuff. So I don't know. I mean, like, I think Saltburn and to a lesser extent Maestro...
Those are the two somewhat buzzier things. In my text threads, which I don't know if that's normal people's content-related text threads, but...
Bob's got the finger on the pulse with his asshole friends.
Got my finger on the pulse with my asshole friends. A little bit of buzz on Poor Things.
Yeah.
But for the most part, from what I can gather is that that's through Brecken, is that, people are talking Saltburn. So I think maybe we should too.
And we can definitely lead off with that. I just want to get. So, did you catch the Golden Globes? Were you aware of this?
I was not. I was watching the playoff football games.
Right.
I was watching the final football games of Week 18.
Bills, Dolphins. Right.
Yeah. Had no reference level or even understanding that they were on until Monday morning when I saw a picture of Cillian Murphy holding a Golden
Your
Globe.
Boy. Yeah. So I was like, okay. I didn't watch the whole thing. Because I was at dinner. I forget what else I was doing. But yeah, the first hour, apparently a train wreck. This host.
Yeah, I heard Jill Coy was.
I have no idea who that is. Do you? I've never seen him before.
Yeah, a comedian where people have asked me at times, oh, you used to do improv comedy? Do you watch Jill Coy? And I was like, I don't think those two things run parallel with each other. But no, I've never seen Jill Coy. And then I've seen his face as a thumbnail on Netflix. But I've never actually.
I don't think I've ever seen his face. I had no idea who this guy was, and apparently he was just the worst host anyone's ever seen. Just the worst, the completely unfunny jokes. Just a total clunker. If it's not Ricky Gervais or Tina Fey, oh my god, and what's her name hosting? That Amy Poehler team. Who cares? Like, have some fun with this fucking. It's a Golden Globes, and it's the voting body is now defunct. So it's like it's this new kind of board of Globe journalists. Like, I mean, who even knows who's voting?
Who cares?
Like, really, who cares? So just, but to their credit, they got a lot of stars at the thing. I mean, like, they got a lot of people to show up, which I was kind of surprised by.
Yeah, the campaigns are starting. That's why.
Yeah, and I guess my only takeaway is that all right, we got Cillian Murphy versus Paul Giamatti. It looks like, and then we got Lily Gladstone versus Emma Stone. Those are kind of the races. I think my favorite category is once again going to be screenplay, because I think Oppenheimer looks like that's off and away and going to win a whole bunch. But then you got Anatomy of a Fall winning best original screenplay, and then
one I have to see.
Yeah, which is such a badass movie. It's so cool. And then adapted is going to be pretty tight. You know, you got
because Barbie's in there. Barbie's going to win that.
Barbie, Oppenheimer, Flower Moon. I think, you know, Holdover is also an original screenplay, so it could be Holdovers versus Anatomy of a Fall. Anyway, but that's usually the most fun race, right? It seems the most up in the air. And then I think we got a two-horse race in both acting categories, so that should be kind of fun. Although
it'll be fun.
I still give Bradley Cooper. I think he's in there with a shot, like in terms of like a three-way race. So I'm kind of excited about how that plays out. Now, you know, we're fully starting the whole season, and it gets less and less interesting every year. Although I do think this was a good year for movies, so that's positive.
I do too.
Versus last year, and then what we can expect from next year being like all this backloaded slate of like nothing coming out except Dune 2. So I think we got to enjoy it while we have it. I mean, this could shape up to be one of the most solid Oscar years, or you know, award slate since I don't know, what was that, 2007? Let me 2016. What was that? The Social Network year, but then 2007 being obviously Michael Clayton. There Will Be Blood, and
I think it was like 2010 was the Social Network year. But it's the dates all run together, buddy. Exactly. And just watch the mental gymnastics I do on this. But most years I lose the Oscar bet to you. You're good, honestly. Like you're pretty locked in with what this voting body seems to at least recognize. And now the mental gymnastics I do is I'm actually glad that I typically get it wrong because they typically get it wrong.
Right.
And so it's like I normally choose the people's champions. Mm-hmm. And damn it for sometimes an embarrassing bet, which we don't even really do sometimes.
Yeah.
But
it is hard to cash those in.
So like my thing is, if Cillian Murphy loses, and I know we'll get to this when we do the Oscar conversation, but like honestly, that's going to be the one that stands the test of time. Like if they gave it to somebody else, and again, we'll cross this bridge when we have conversations on the other films and during the award show. But I was like, I'm going to be happy that I at least had picked the one that is going to be the iconic performance that will be in cinema talk for the next X amount of decades.
Yeah, and you like, obviously I'm pulling for Cillian Murphy. I loved him in that movie and the movie itself. But like Paul Giamatti, The Holdovers, Bradley Cooper with this kind of firebrand, a tour de force performance. Mm-hmm. I don't think there's no these lame biopics that suck and it's just like, oh, let's give it to Jessica Chastain for this shitty movie. Or what's the one I'm trying to think of where Renee Zellweger and just like that
Oh yeah, the what was that? The Judy Garland movie.
Yeah, she played Judy. Yeah, I think it was called Judy, right?
It was called Judy. Yeah.
A terrible, boring movie. It's just like, we gotta like watch clips of this for 6 months. I don't think there's any stinkers like that. I think it's hard for them to fuck this one up. That's what I'm saying. I think like the 10 nominees are gonna be movies. I think I've liked all of them. You know, we're not gonna see like a Ferrari or a May December get in there. Although, I mean. You know, don't quote me on May December. I guess it could, but
we'll see.
But I think it's, you know, the 10. I think to just do a quick heat check: Oppenheimer, Barbie, Killers of the Flower Moon, Poor Things, Holdovers, Anatomy of a Fall, probably maybe Zone of Interest. I haven't seen it, but it's getting a lot of kind of buzz for that. American Fiction, a movie I really really liked.
Haven't seen that.
And then I don't know, maybe like Across the Spider-Verse. I mean, Color Purple, maybe. Color Pro, I haven't seen it either, but that could be a one where it's like, it's kind of like, you know, like Spielberg, you know, the Fablemans is kind of getting there because of reputation. But I think there's going to be 10 movies that are really good. Maestro is probably up in there, like in the seventh spot. But let's jump in with, you know, the little give it a stream chat and
give it a stream.
Talk about,
sign my stream.
Talk about movies that people may be actually watching. A lot of people were really hyped for Saltburn, and I was like, I saw the trailer. I was like, meh, I'm good, just because it looked like Bridgerton, you know, kind of like the sensationalized, you know, kind of trying to do like an overly sexualized, not period piece because it's not, but kind of this
atmospheric.
Yeah, cashing in on kind of like the Crown interest or these manor homes of. Luxe lifestyle and you know, like the upper crust of society, cafe society, you know what I mean? But when it came down to it, just to give my quick you know, Rotten Tomatoes consensus, it's I'm kind of, someone else told this to me, but it's like the untalented Mr. Ripley, which I think is kind of perfect. And I'm not trying to totally disparage the movie. I think it was kind of interesting and looked really cool, great sets, costumes, but I don't know. I was at the end of it. I was like, there was a bunch of weird shit, and like ultimately, what did it all mean? So he was just in love with himself. Like, so that was kind of my quick take. But I mean, what did you think? I haven't even heard about it.
Before I get into my take, I do have to warn you quickly that my bath water is draining. So you better hurry. Just get to where you need to go, man.
All right. We gotta halt the pod so I can slurp up some.
We'll fix this in editing.
Yeah. All right, I got some. Oh, okay. Got it just in time.
Yes. It's everything I've heard, and so my fiance listens to some of these just pop culture content, like Morning Toast, and you know, just cheap. She listens to Pivot podcasts, just things where people are talking about what's happening in culture and everything else. And so she sometimes comes to me with that. That's where I honestly get the pulse of the vibes and what the community, like, that's how I heard about the Jill Coy thing.
Oh, okay.
She was like, oh, did you hear about this? And so she'll sometimes come and be like, people are talking about Saltburn and they're saying it's hyper stylized and looks really cool, but at the end of the day is just kind of a whatever movie.
So Brecken's the people's and champ, and we're just kind of out here.
She's the people's champ, and
for
my shitty text thread. Yeah, my shitty text thread. I'm like, people are really into Poor Things right now, and it's like, no, it's just my one buddy who loves Emma Stone taking her clothes off.
Oh my god! Yeah.
But it's a. But so anyway, so I went in with the expectation of it that was. That must be the buzz. Like, yeah. we'll see what happens. I like to form my own opinions, you know. And I want to say I'm mixed on it. If we had to give it a letter grade, like a C+er.
Yeah.
I loved Emerald Fennell's first movie,
Promising Strong Woman.
Which, Promising Strong Woman, Strong Woman. But, so this is a little less than that. I think it's, there's a few stars, the number one star of this movie is the production design
100%,
and the production value. The fog budget was the number two star here. So much fog.
Oh, yeah.
And I think I texted you that, and it was really funny because at one point I wasn't cast in a play, but needed to get credit for school, and so they put me on the fog machine in a play that you were in.
Escanaba and the Moonlight. And if you look way down the credit list, fog machine guy, Bob Panelon.
So, hey, I know what it's like.
You were out there taking a
fog.
Bow. You got to. The fog. It was paramount in that movie.
Great bit.
Yeah, and. Let me ask you this.
What was the bigger star of that play that no one saw that's listening to this? The fog machine or the fart sound effect made by Andrew?
Andrew Papa's fart sound effect, if he's listening. Papa, one of your greatest achievements. I think that...
It was his greatest
That needs to be up on your William Mercy website page. Let me ask you this. Would you rather have the peach from Call Me By Your Name or drink the bathwater?
Well, bathwater. The peaches... It still sometimes creeps into my mind. That's hilarious. I have a couple of what ifs for you as well.
Yeah.
But so anyway, production design was interesting. Particularly when people say like the stylized, that's what they're talking about. They're talking about the aesthetic of the film, the music mixed with the visuals, kind of dreamy. They do like a Midsummer Night's Dream bit in there, but it has like dreamy elements to it. But
just way
my
cooler
favorite...
than it needed to be for a bunch of kids fucking around at a rich family's house.
But you know, it made it for an interesting watch. Yeah. My favorite moment in particular is when they're wheeling a dead body away and that the butler's trying to close red drapes and it's kind of bringing in this kind of like blood red vibe into the room. There's like wine being over poured. It was just very, there's a lot of just like string together
felt
bizarre
very like
scenes.
Shakespearean, right? Like out damn spots. So like it makes
and even some of the even some of like a lot of it looked like proscenium theaters. Mm-hmm. Like a lot of the production design was meant to look almost like a playset, you know, and it that goes into the Shakespearean, the, you know, obviously the theater, the theater look of it, the aesthetic. And those were the two main stars, production, design, and the fog. But Barry Keoghan was obviously legit. And you know, I think I want to give him credit because I've seen him in a few movies, like The Killing of a Sacred Deer, which still lives in my head rent-free, like The Peach from Call Me By Your Name. And then, he was in the Irish movie with Banshees of Inisherin.
Colin Farrell
and you know Brendan Gleeson.
Yeah, he was
and
great
then and then he's in this and he's different in every movie. Like I want to give him credit that he is physically different. His characters have very different vibes, unlike Rosamund Pike, who feels like she's just a psycho in every movie. And I'm like, hey, maybe don't just do psychos.
Yeah,
but
she did have a pretty good line when she was like, yeah, I was lesbian for a while. It was just too wet for me. Men are so lovely and dry. Barry Keoghan, real quick, just to piggyback on what you're saying, it gives me a lot of faith that he might do a pretty decent Joker.
Sure. I thought the same thing. And I think the two that what I was really trying to put my finger on was he was equal parts like innocent and you immediately felt bad for him when he couldn't pay his check. Mm-hmm. His only friend is just screaming about math equations in this like Harry Potter hall, which I guess every school in England just has these long bench tables, but you just feel so bad for him. But you also like, then you get these moments of menace where he's
that nerd trying to be his friend was so weird.
That was called Matt Hayes. But I think the moment when he's planting the seed that all of the stories Carey Mulligan was telling weren't true, and I get that you could see that there was kind of some menace, and he was seducing his way into each character in a slightly different way.
Oh yeah,
that was I was like, oh, this is cool. Like there's 12 different layers to this one particular character.
Very
but then
divide
you,
and conquer.
And then you get switched right back to empathy when... Because halfway through the movie, you're like, oh, okay, this kid's got a lot more going on than what meets the eye. And then you also get... You get thrown right back into empathy when he shows up at the parents' house. He gets surprised that he's got to go back. He's got to leave Saltburn and go see his parents. And you find out the whole thing was a ruse. And he's just sitting there in almost like this fetal like rocking position, and it's just had to watch through my eyes. Like honestly, that was the worst scene for me, was the painful him having to sit through this awkward snack with his parents.
Incredibly nice, wholesome family environment. Obviously, like a kind, warm home that is just so boring. It's created this psychopath.
Yeah, honestly, that's the only way to put it. Yeah, that's a perfect. Yeah, he's so bored. He lives in his mind so much.
Yeah,
that it has manifested into this psychopathic behavior, and he just completely devours this family, which is kind of interesting. I think it's admirable where the movie went. Like, it goes insane sometimes.
And yeah, they took some swings. Cool.
Like, and so I want to. This is my what if for you. Or I guess what was the scene that was the most what the fuck? So you've got bathwater.
Yeah.
You've got the vampire menstruation.
Okay. Yep.
You've got angry grave sex.
Yeah.
And then you have the Farley gay rape scene.
Oh, okay. And I guess I would throw in the nude frolicking at the end. Although nude, that wasn't really.
Yeah, that's not necessarily intense. It's just a nude guy. But I mean, maybe it's intense for you. But anyway.
Well, a lot of dong swinging around there. I was kind of like
them when he takes his pants off in the the straw.
I was like, dude, like the literal and figurative balls on this guy to like have a tracking shot follow you around for like, you know, the last 10 minutes of the movie. Just, I mean, that's quite a lot of frontal nudity, even for today's standards, right?
And it's like that, Hugh Grant in Love Actually, if you were naked. Ass naked.
I thought the exact same thing. God, it's so funny. Right. Yeah, Natalie. So funny. Oh God, we need to get Hugh Grant to refilm that, but the nude version.
Yeah. Barry Keoghan said, hold my beer.
I think, and I'm trying to remember which came first, bathwater or vampire menstruation.
Bathwater.
Because if that was the first one, that when it was like, I was like, oh, what the fuck is this guy doing? That just slur. I mean, was it just the soapy
bathwater? At first I thought he was going to lay on it, which is gross enough. Like someone else's bathwater that he'd been masturbating in.
Yeah,
I thought he was just going to be in it, which was already gross. Yeah. And then when he turns his head, you're like, oh, we're going there. And then you don't know what's happening with Venetia, the sister at first. And then, I mean, then it's this whole, it's not the time of the month. And you're like, okay, gross. But they're just kind of alluding to it. And then it's like, no, we're going to go full Bob Ross finger painting here.
Yeah. See, I could see myself actually participating in that scene.
Oh, my God. As which character?
Yeah, the menstruating woman getting eaten out. Yeah. I think drinking the cum bathwater was probably the gross out moment for me. And then the what the fuck was like kind of fucking the grave. But at the same time, it's like, so what? I mean, it's not like he's having sex with a dead body. It's just moist soil. Dirt.
Yeah,
it's kind of weird, but yeah. So I think the bathwater for me. I mean, what was it for you? The blood?
Yeah, the blood. I guess. Yeah, we'll split the difference because I think those two are obviously the most what the fuck. It reminded me the gay rape scene almost reminded me of the scene in Wedding Crashers where Vince Vaughn says he hasn't slept well, and Owen Wilson goes, "Oh, what, lumpy mattress?" And he goes, "Yeah, maybe lumpy mattress, or maybe midnight rape, or maybe gay naked art show." Like, that's maybe it was one of those other things. Or,
see, no, it's a lumpy mattress. I was thinking about at World's End, or the end of the world, I mean, where Jonah's like, something not that chill happened last night. Like the devil comes in and fucks him.
Something not that chill.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I mean, I just overall, I think it was kind of entertaining. It wasn't a long hang. It moved. It had style. I think the director has talent and can at least create a mood. I think the comp to Talented Mr. Ripley is absolutely adequate, and that movie is so much better performed. You've got breakout Jude Law. You've got Matt fucking Damon in the 90s. Absolutely. And then you've got Philip Seymour Hoffman.
Philip Seymour Hoffman.
That movie was so much more nuanced. And
ESH.
absolutely, like it, and Gwyneth was in that as well. But yeah, it's just movie had way better young actors. Barry Keoghan's nice, but the kid from Euphoria, like more people are worried about who he's having sex with and his characters than like Olivia Rodrigo's songs. It's like the same thing. Like, stop worrying about these two dudes and who they're banging. But anyway, it's like that kid's okay. Rosamund Pike, I can do without. She doesn't do anything for me. The Farley kid was honestly kind of forgettable. We could have erased his whole character, and I didn't like that
character at all. That's like the gay rape scene was kind of my least favorite, because I was like, these guys are enemies and this is very uncomfortable. I don't like the actor. I didn't get an honest scene from him. Right. Yeah.
I didn't buy his disdain, and I didn't like the whole begging them for money and the power dynamics within their family. I didn't like his like posh snooty.
I know, right?
Dude, like it was actually done better by the kid from Euphoria.
Yeah, yeah, 100%.
But
but yeah, I mean, worthwhile. I think probably got a little bit overhyped just because of the tantalizing subject matter. I guess I don't know, but Talented Mr. Ripley is a better version of that movie. But yeah, I think I would agree with everything you just said. Moving on, I haven't really got a chance to talk to you about The Maestro. I went down to LA, so Netflix bought the old Egyptian theater, which kind of came before the Chinese Grauman's Theater, and really awesome renovated theater, gorgeous, really comfortable, all that crap. But I think I had a lot of fun with this, man. I didn't really know what to expect. I don't know dick about got Leonard Bernstein. I don't know what's I just know that Lydia Tarr, a fictional character, looked up to him. So, but yeah, back-to-back years with conductor movies. Yeah. And I think this one was exciting. I think, a tour de force performance directed by and starring Bradley Cooper, who just desperately wants that Oscar. It's almost like Leo staring directly into the screen and Revenant just like, just give me that shit. Look how hard I worked. Do you know what I've sacrificed? So what were your reactions? Do you like it?
I did like it. Bradley Cooper, let's start with him. And obviously most of the movie is him. He's in almost every shot of the movie. So I've said this before, I'll say it again. I have come a long way in my appreciation for Bradley Cooper. I did not like him. I actively talk shit about Bradley Cooper, probably on this podcast. And I, in hindsight and in self-reflection, was a little jealous because of his role in Wedding Crashers. And I thought that movie, I just referenced it earlier without even thinking about it. But I saw his character as the heel. I also played a lot of characters like that, Sound the Siren. But I was like, oh, why does this guy get so much attention? Like, this character was a layup. He's in a movie where other people are smashing it. Like, and I just kind of hated it. And then he was in The Hangover, which I know it's a hot take, but I think is the most overrated comedy the last 25 years. I think just the hype it got.
Sexiest Man Alive right around that time.
And then so he gets The Hangover, which is getting a lot of love, and outside of Zach Galifianakis, I was like, the rest of the guys I could care less about. And then Silver Linings Playbook, I also thought was overrated. I like some David O. Russell stuff, but not that particular movie. But then the winds started to change, and I obviously didn't care about the Marvel Raccoon, but American Hustle, I was like, this is a cool movie. American Sniper, I appreciated the performance. I thought he was interesting in War Dogs. Then he was the telemarketer.
You watched American Sniper just saluting the entire two and a half hours, right?
Thank you for your service. And then I, the telemarketer in that David O. Russell movie, Joy, I was like, oh, this is a cool scene. And then Stars Born is where I was like, okay, this guy, he's legit. Like I rode for him. I actually was really pulling for him in that Oscar race. And then Nightmare Alley, we thought was really cool.
Yeah,
and I was like, oh, this guy's, I've been having blinders on to him. Like this whole time he's been absolutely hitting triples and home runs. So that's where I wanted to start.
He does cool stuff too, right? He's in all these different projects you just named. Like, you know, he could have easily just been like, you know, the D-bag, Hangover, Wedding Crashers guy for his entire career, but he's out there doing like auteur work.
Yeah, he's like a bona fide filmmaker and act probably one of the finest actors we have right now. So I need to give him his flowers. I was fucking wrong. With that said, I thought he was awesome in this movie. It has a lot of 50s speak, which it almost kind of like,
he kind of like almost sounded like Stewie from the
That's great.
It's almost like very front of nose, very, but then the way they talk, because they're sophisticated in New York in the 50s, it was very quick speaky kind of thing. It was a very heightened.
Well, I just got to the party. You forgot about the piano player. Oh, I'm right here.
Don't forget about the piano player. I'm right here.
But he was obviously like working right through his name. I think I'm doing a pretty good job there. I want my credit. But
yeah, it's not bad. Do you think the nose played?
Nose played, Matt Damon. Second Matt Damon reference tonight. But yeah, I think, I thought he was awesome. There's one scene that's almost like the she's fucking winning powerhouse scene in Marriage Story, where the Your Truth is a Lie showdown during the Thanksgiving parade. That's an amazing scene. And then of course you've got the 8 minute, like, him playing in that beautiful cathedral
that
and like
was
rocking.
Incredible. Yeah. I mourn for the fact that that scene will be viewed on Netflix, just because it's so operatic, literally, and to kind of miss out on the thunderous surround sound aspect of that. You could feel it reverberating like you were actually there in this cathedral, this cacophonous.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just such a great moment. It's obviously, you know, he's kind of trying to save his marriage by just showing his brilliance and winning her back. And the best scene of the movie for me as well. And the fact that he was actually conducting and took 3 years to learn that, you know, whatever. But
yeah, I sent you some of those, like just what a conductor's doing and all mm-hmm. of the strategy around how they move. But obviously he's studying Leonard Bernstein, who there's a YouTube video that I found, but he talks about like the different styles of the conductors and how Leonard Bernstein was very theatrical and he really used a lot of movement where other guys are very tight. And but anyway,
I don't know, if I was like a tight ass violinist, I think I'd rather want someone to like be a physical representation of the excitement of the mm-hmm. piece, so I could kind of get in there and like kind of feel it.
Yeah.
As opposed to like just a guy twicking his wrists mm-hmm. and it's like it's very by the numbers. I kind of, you know, it's like Dan Campbell out there, you know, just kind of get hype.
Yeah,
just like
biting off,
get up and run through a brick wall.
I did have some problems with it though. I think act three is probably the best act because the first two, basically the first like 90 minutes of it, they're trying to do a lot. They're trying to kind of summarize his career in a lot of different ways. You've kind of have like artist talk, but also some relationship stuff, because really it becomes a cancer movie in act three.
Yeah.
And that's where a lot of kind of the better scenes are.
Yeah. Just, that's where the meat is.
That's where
right.
the scene work is. And I run the scene work, but there's a lot of stuff at the top where it's these like, he makes a lot of bold choices editing and he like cuts right to like a dance sailor number, or there's
On the Town that got a little theater query there.
It was just kind of like, oh, interesting. But then we've got these like really grounded realism scenes, and I'm not saying that you can't do both, but it was just kind of like it act three didn't hit emotionally enough with me because we were trying to do too much stuff in act one and two, and I didn't feel the relationship by the time I needed to start worrying about cancer scenes. That's what I'm trying to say.
It was just kind of like kind of flying along, just like kind of like a cliff notes of this relationship that's supposed to be so central.
Yeah, but then all of a sudden it's the most important thing. And honestly, it bookends, right? Like you start with him being interviewed at that piano and he's talking about his wife, and then it ends with him being, you know, surrounded by the cameras that ultimately were part of his narrative and the attention that he needed. I mean, he was an attention...
Oh yeah.
Craver, who hated himself, so he tried to surround himself with as much extracurriculars while also abandoning his family. You know, it's, I mean, as somebody that loves attention myself, that's a good lesson to learn, you know, in terms of priorities, but
could totally relate, for sure. Just just wanting to be front and center and show off your gift and, you know, just doing so many things. You know, he did the score for West Side Story, which isn't really featured, you know, because I guess they want... Yeah, they want to try to focus more on the relationship and the courtship and all that. I like that they didn't do Cradle to the Grave.
Mm-hmm. We do too.
We jump in right when he's got his big shot, and then we're off to the races.
Yeah.
I actually really liked how they kind of built up from, like, that there's an eras, right?
Mm-hmm.
It was like 4-3 ratio, black and white. You know, what was that, the 40s, and we get into the 50s, more swings, 60s, 70s, you got that color palette, the screen kind of goes wider. Yeah. I just like when, like, the technology kind of evolves with the time frame. I thought that was really well done.
I agree. I think there's some really cool filmmaking things. I also watched it, I have to admit, I did watch it at home on Netflix, and Breck likes to watch with subtitles on.
Mm-hmm.
Which was cool in this particular instance because the subtitles would show you the titles of the music that was playing. You'd see it would like name his wife's name. It would be like this person's melody or something. I was like, oh, cool. Like I'm getting the actual context of the songs where I normally wouldn't have.
He would title the pieces.
Well, yeah. The piece titles. We're just playing naturally as closed captioning would, but it was like, oh, cool, like, this isn't part of, like, the normal viewing experience. You'd have to know a shit ton about Leonard Bernstein to appreciate this specific choice, you know?
Do you think Tar helped or hurt this movie? Like, did anyone see Tar? Are people burnt out on conductor movies?
No, I don't think there's conductor fatigue. I think there's probably a very healthy portion of movie fans that didn't see Tar but saw this, or saw Tar and didn't see this.
What would you say is a better movie?
I thought Tar was... This had better performances, but Tar was actually a little more gripping. I kind of like the thriller element of it.
Yeah, I guess I would agree. They kind of have inverse problems. Like, well, because like Tar was better the first half. Or is that accurate? I can't remember how I felt about that.
I thought Tar got crazier and crazier as it went on. There was kind of a mystery element that I was like, oh, and the more you unpacked it was almost kind of like dark comedy in a way. But I thought that was a...
This is more of a straight up biopic versus like a
rise and fall.
Yeah, rise and fall thriller.
I will say the relationship, it was kind of cool in that I almost looked at this as an anti-Whiplash. Like, Whiplash is about what does it take to have a creative breakthrough and what does it take to be great. And this guy was a prodigy, and...
How do you deal with greatness once you have it?
Yeah, but also they talked about the dynamic between him as a composer versus him as a conductor. And he talks about it, and it's a pretty cool monologue, but he says, you know, one of them's a very isolated, and that's his creative genius, was very private, but he's such an extroverted person and had such a low self-worth that he needed all that attention that's it drove him to the conductor stuff. But otherwise, just all of his internal crisis led to a lack of output and honestly, like, genius recognition.
Yeah, it seemed like he had more fun kind of collaborating with the musical theater stuff, and that's like kind of what he wanted to do. And then that guy, I have no idea who he was, uncle or some sort of a mentor figure, was like, no, you need to be the first great American composer. What are you doing with the musical theater? So it's like, you could tell he kind of struggled with the isolationist aspect of being like a singular great composer versus kind of showing up and just...
Yeah. But you see Whiplash, like, that kid melts down that relationship because it's going to get in the way of his greatness.
Right.
He has no issue not having friends because he wants to make this breakthrough, and he ends up making the breakthrough. This is, I can't spend any time with myself because I hate myself, so I'm going to go run out and self-destruct myself and my family and my career, which that's also kind of interesting.
Yeah. Right?
Where he already had the genius and he doesn't see the full extent of it.
Yeah,
and so... And I thought that was kind of cool, but like at the end of the day, you have this kind of unspoken tragedy of the time lost with his family and his wife. And I did like kind of the button of the movie of the summer still sings in me, and showing that the music got him through those hard times. He still has deep affection for his wife, but also a tragic regret because he blew it. And that's where that the end of that cathedral scene is really cool when he sees her, and it's like, oh, and the music is able to kind of create the bridge while also being very sweaty. But anyway, there were some nice moments.
How do you feel about the quote that starts off the movie where it's like, a work of art does not answer questions, it provokes them, and its essential meaning is in the tension between the contradictory answers? I mean, I don't know how many questions the movie provoked, so it's kind of interesting to lead off with that.
Yeah, what questions? Where's been our discourse, Matt?
I mean, a life lived, a greatness shown bare. It's
more of just a cool quote versus like a driving theme of the movie.
I did read a review where it's, you know, Maestro is all about that tension. You know, at the end of the quote where it's like, you know, the tension that, so art is supposed to create tension between different, like, interpretations, different answers to the question, you know. So I guess I get that. There's certainly a lot of tension of, like, I guess it's like the tug and the tug of war between family and mediocrity or greatness and being isolated. So maybe that's kind of what they're going for. But what was cool about seeing this movie at the Egyptian, that they I'll show you here. They handed out these like kind of stills from the movie and kind of like the real life moment it was based on. And that you could take them home. There was like, I think 20 of them, and each one had a quote. I grabbed this one.
Why are yours stuck together?
Oh yeah, sorry. Just pulled it out of the bath.
Okay.
I sometimes
you were doing in the bath, looking at stills of Leonard Bernstein.
I sometimes think that man's capacity for laughter is nobler than his divine gift of suffering. Laughing cleanses a man; it restores his sanity and balances his sense of values. I think that's totally accurate. And then, I guess that's a famous Bernstein quote. But
man, what a genius quote! Maybe we would have got more of that if he wasn't, you know, raving with 20-year-olds in his 70s at the Boom Boom Room, at the Body Shop.
Just think of the bottom of that bathtub, just the stew that would be swirling around. Anyway, but yeah, no, so some good stuff. I think there's like some meat on the bones here. It was, it's very a blockbuster biopic about a conductor. I mean, God bless him for bringing it to the screen.
Yeah, absolutely. Bradley Cooper, you're cool, dude. Sorry. Yeah. Sorry for saying all those things about you.
I never doubted it. The sack. I was in from day one.
Yeah. Sack attack.
But yeah, check it out.
You probably love the raccoon.
I think he's probably one of the best parts about Guardians, like his performance. Yeah. You know, the fact that he can also show up and voice an animated character is also pretty impressive.
Yeah. Absolutely.
But and you wanted to quickly touch on what Leave the World Behind, the Sam Esmail movie?
The Bird Box Jr.
Yes.
Yeah, it's the new installment of what the hell's going on, shitty mystery Netflix holiday dump.
So the guy that gave us Mr. Robot, a pretty cool series, has gotten Julia Roberts. I guess they've collaborated on quite a few stuff, none of which I've seen.
Do you know off the top of your head?
I do not. I had never heard of any of their projects. But I think they've worked together three times or something like that. But this, kind of like an end of the world, apocalyptic, society crumbling due to a lack of internet, and warring tribes.
So you're telling me the internet went out and people lost their mind and went out to California?
I know. Totally just totally unbelievable. You got Teslas flying all over the place, which, you know, was probably one of the cooler scenes. But I think overall, I was like, I was with it for about 45 minutes, maybe an hour and a half. And I was like, I think I'm losing my interest here.
Mm-hmm.
It was like, what was it, 2.5 hours, 2 hours 40? Yeah. I think that needed to be like maybe and I'm not a guy to complain about runtime, but it did kind of lag.
So. Do you remember the South Park episode where the George R.R. Martin is talking about, and he's like, I'm telling you, the dragons are coming, the dragons are coming, the pizzas are coming, they're going to be awesome when they get here, but first, another wiener comes out.
Fluffy wieners, fluffy wieners.
But like, yeah, he keeps promising this like big mystery, mm-hmm. and that's the frustration that Kyle and Stan have and Butters in that moment was my frustration with this movie, where it's like something mystery is happening. Yeah. Something we're gonna find out. What is it? I kind of know something, but I don't really know something. And it was what I call, I was never uncomfortable. It was simulated discomfort. It's like they did things like almost that Joker tuning sound, and they would like make sounds and kind of give like kind of a like spooky vibes and character looks, but like
spooky ghost.
All right, where are we going here? And then
too much hinting, right?
Yeah, it was just like that went on for way too much time. And I think a movie that actually did this vibe a little better was Knock at the Cabin, which was an M. Night Shyamalan movie with Dave Bautista.
Oh, I never saw that.
It's very similar to this, where it's an isolated place, things kind of beyond the control of the characters are happening, and
things go
awry.
You slowly
are getting information on a dire situation.
Yeah.
There was a lot of like kind of spooked out or screaming, and like Julia Roberts, I honestly thought was kind of unwatchable in this, and she'll do anything. She'll do Ticket to Paradise with George Clooney. Like at this point, she's just cashing checks, but mm-hmm. it's like, I didn't feel the payoff at all. And I was they were just trying to make us feel weird for a while, and then ultimately we're going to say that we were thrilled. And I didn't connect with that. I hope I'm explaining myself well.
No, it's like not getting that final moment in Fight Club where you actually see the buildings collapse. It's like, you know, and the Pixies mm-hmm. kicks in. There was no like, okay, we found a bunker that has the Friends DVD.
That was
like,
kind of a funny little payoff though.
I liked
all
that moment.
All the kids want to do is watch TV.
They just want to get in front of the screen. Yeah, for sure. Mm-hmm. Which I liked how they wrapped it up. You know, it's like when an SNL sketch finds the ending, which is always the hardest and worst part. And I think they found the ending, but it was like the lead up, like the constant teasing, and teasing out of like a 2.5 hour plus movie of like, well, you know, I worked for this guy and he kind of knows something and I can't tell you right now because I don't trust you. And it's just, come on, let's like assemble a crew. Let's cut to the chase.
Let's have some driving action here. And I agree with you. And then you've got really great actors who kind of do nothing, like Mahershala Ali, Beast.
Yeah,
kind of as a nothing burger here. That could have easily been played by Kevin Hart. Like it was like there's nothing like emotionally in demand here. And then Ethan Hawke has my most reshares on my social media in terms of just talking about life, culture, acting as a craft. Like I just love him, and I think I love his characters. I've loved a lot of his movies, but I was kind of hyped. I was really here for Ethan Hawke.
Yeah, we really kind of needed like an hour long kind of semi improvised, realistic, dialogue heavy marriage.
Yeah, I think that's where the director should have gone. Was just a very dialogue heavy, improvised, almost like, where, like take out the thriller element, add romance to it, like young romance.
Well, actually, keep the thriller, keep the world imploding, but just have them walking down the street talking about like whether or not he found this woman attractive 20 years ago and where the relationship mm-hmm. is now.
I think that's a good choice.
The Ethan Hawke stuff was cool, where like the woman screaming and running out from the field and desperate to get a ride. And he's like, no, sorry. And then like, what happens to her? What was she running from? What was going on? Like,
no. But the theme at the end of the day is we're going to be ultimately our own destruction because we can't end up coming to any sort of trust, and we're just being driven further and further into our silos of antitrust against humanity. So inevitably it's not going to be a blow up the world missile attack, but if they just kind of create misinformation and shut off resources, we'll cannibalize each other, which is kind of worth a discussion. I think they could have done that in a much more engaging way.
I just thought that like once we get that shipping liner coming aboard the beach, which is a really cool image, I thought we would get more of like stuff happening. I mean, I don't need to see like what's that movie, like The Day After Yesterday or The Day Before Tomorrow, or, you know, we don't need to see some the Earth exploding type of you know, that director. But I thought we'd get more imagery, you know, and the deer were kind of cool and foreboding, and like when they were just rushing past the
cabin. Actually didn't understand the deer part though.
I think like, just about like the animals always know or something, and they're
Then like why corner these people in a, like why all hang out in one backyard? It was just didn't that seem atmospherically just weird for the sake of being weird? Because the other stuff I get it, like the kid's teeth falling out, they created a radiation issue. The pamphlet's falling. It's like we're gonna spread misinformation on who might be actually doing these attacks. The phone lines going down, and the boat coming ashore was because navigation systems went down, and so it's like that's all that sense. The deer's cornering two women and that was Julia's big character arc moment. Is I'm actually gonna be nice to this person and put myself. Right, I'm gonna just put my narcissism down for a minute.
Maybe it was kind of like a Planet of the Apes thing where like the deer, it's like, all right, here we go. This is our time.
Okay. This is our time to take. Yeah. If that was the choice, it was not clear.
I just think it was like a lot of stuff getting thrown against a wall and then like nothing being revisited or nothing really kind of coming to conclusion.
And
like,
were you creeped out?
And then
the dragons are coming. I swear it's going to be so awesome. It's going to be so awesome.
Yeah, that's a great call. The dragons are coming. The dragons are coming. It's going to be
so... The pizzas are coming. And when they get it, you haven't ordered the pizzas yet. It's been 3.5 hours and Scott's diabetic. Anyway.
So I think an interesting kind of movie. I kind of like the idea, but maybe the execution was somewhat didn't quite stick the landing, I guess.
You're telling me Netflix made an original piece of content that they didn't buy that was just kind of there? Weird. Yeah, I know.
Prepare to have your mind blown. Well, yeah, all right, so that's what, 2 Give It a Streams, 1 a miss from us, but I recommended it to my girlfriend Jordan. She was like, one of the best things you've ever recommended to me. I was like, yeah, well, you kind of, you got to know who you're, you got to know their thing, right? And if they're into like weird, kind of freaky, atmospheric things, then, you know, this thing's got it for you.
Yeah. Julia, go ahead. Scream at the deers, dude.
What's she gonna do? Screaming at the deers. My life story, Julia Roberts.
There you go.
Well, cool. All right, man. Well, what's next? What do you need to catch up on? What's on
what do
your
you
list?
Think if you had to prioritize what I'm missing, what do you think is just the absolute like need to see it, because not just because it's a player and award show, but just because you think it's a good walk?
I think you'd really like American Fiction. I had a great time. I watched.
You want to get in the elevator?
Yeah, let's do it. Let's get in the elevator. So
okay.
Christmas Day. I'm driving around LA. There's no traffic. It's the best time. Alamo Drafthouse, one of the coolest theaters you can see a movie at. Jeffrey Wright finally gets the starring vehicle he's deserved for quite a long time. Funny, heartwarming, a story about a writer who's fed up with the state of popular fiction, and he writes something as a joke that then becomes as popular as everything else, and then he's got to kind of pretend that he's this convict who wrote this biography. And it's just like he's constantly stuck in like, well, I would like the money. The money is nice, but I've written something that I abhor, and it was meant to be a joke. But now it's my greatest success. So
it sounds like Scrody McBooger Balls.
Yeah, exactly.
Meets the Tropic Thunder Nick Nolte character who 100%. Didn't actually blow his arms off.
No, it's a lot of fun. It's, you know, it's like, how do you want to be remembered? And like, can you enjoy something that a piece of work you would disown, but it's your greatest achievement. As far as everyone's concerned. So that's a cool one. I mean, Poor Things, I would encourage you to watch so we can chat about it.
I'll watch that in the bathtub.
Yeah. But yeah, there's some good stuff out there. I really want to see The Taste of Things. This is France's submission for the Oscars, a foreign language film, and as opposed to Anatomy of a Fall. So it's gonna be interesting these two French movies. But
Anatomy of a Fall was something that I originally clocked as must see. But I'll start with I'll kind of go in order of your priority list there. I think that's a great roadmap. So yeah.
Well, cool, man. Let's cut it there and let's go do some work.
Let's go do some work. I appreciate you guys listening. Hope you guys enjoyed our time here at the Give It a Stream couch. Give It a Stream, sign my stream. Don't forget to smash that subscribe button if you're liking what you're hearing. Leave us some feedback in the comments. And we will see you down the road. Bye.
Mary, I've been thinking. Can we move the Japanese ambassador to 4 o'clock tomorrow?
Certainly, sir.